before I start timing me, I want to make a couple of thank yous. First of all, to David Fastenfest and to Jesse for putting this together. I'm not sure the exact sponsorship, but somehow it's tied to Critical Sociology, which is a wonderful journal for people aren't familiar with it, especially if you're a sociologist. And then I also want to really, you know, thank Chris and Corey so much for giving such a background, because it saves me from having to say a lot since I talk more than 20 minutes. So, okay, I'm starting to tie myself now. Okay. I agree with so much, and I wish I just had the time to comment on their papers, but I don't. I'm going to talk about the Tea Party, and the first thing I'm going to say is the good news. They're falling apart. They're retreating back to the sewers from which they've sprung, and so they're just falling apart in a number of ways. I don't know if I'm going to get a chance to talk about all of them, but if we just look at the fact that Glenn Beck is off the air, that the Republican Party is giving up dismantling Social Security, Medicare, et cetera, and the Tea Party people are talking about impeaching people like John Boehner because he's a rhino. That's a Republican name only. After, between Obama's assassination, or whatever you want to call it, of Obama's assassination of Osama and the presentation of the birth certificate, the birther number has dropped in half. So, plus they've become such assholes that they have mobilized a counter effort, and so, in 15 days or whenever it is, the budget will be extended. And for better or for worse, you can decide that yourself, Obama's going to be reelected. Okay, so what I want to say, first of all, in terms of going back in history, I'm not going to argue it here. I've done it in my papers that I think I've sent people, one or two of them. I would kind of just as a, you know, sort of a tongue-in-cheek say that, that this notion of the Tea Party does have long-standing cultural roots. I start in 1690 with Bacon's Rebellion. I don't know how many people know that part of American history, but the citizens of Virginia were really pissed off at the English governor for not being sufficiently repressive of the Native Americans. And for those people who don't come in contact with Native Americans very often, these were the lower class, the blacks of their age, and they just had to be eliminated. All the things that Corey was saying, you know, the dangerous classes that needed to be controlled. Since they couldn't be controlled, they were evacuated and assassinated and all that. Okay. My own particular position is rooted in the Frankfurt School of Critical Theory, which was a European product. It was the work that I do represents the particular synthesis of Marx, Weber, and Freud. And so I'm coming out of that particular Freudo-Marxist tradition, but part of that tradition is, of course, the valorization of reason as the dominant value of late capital. Okay. I think that for understanding the Tea Party, I'm going to go back to Europe. See, not all of us are strictly American. And if we go back to the 18th Brumaire, I think that the 18th Brumaire is the classical statement on right-wing populism. And remember, who were the reactionary classes of their day? The small farmers who had gotten their land, they had become peasants, they'd become landowners, but their land was increasingly being parceled, their taxes were going up, and they were being basically screwed by capital, and they go for a, you know, this particular agenda. Marx described them as like potatoes in a sack, describing the fact that they really had very little communication with the larger world of ideas, little communication with each other. And I'm not sure Marx was actually saying they had the same intelligence as potatoes, but the point is that we have the prototypical scene of right populism ultimately supporting, Louis Bonaparte, who is, you know, sort of the Donald Trump of his age, sort of speak. I could say a lot more about that, but I'll never get more. I'm already 3 minutes, and I want to just quickly mention the importance of Wilhelm Reich, who's not mentioned very often anymore, because one of the key things in Wilhelm Reich was the necessity of capitalism to maintain sexual repression in order to maintain a disciplined working class. Now, this is important today because we really, you know, everybody's screwing. There's very, very few people that aren't, but there's an ideology of it that I think was sort of addressed by both Chris and Corey in terms of the control over women. Okay, the Frankfurt School began as an attempt to understand fascism in ways that classical Marxists couldn't. And one of the key ways this was done was seen clearly in the work of Fromm and then later Adorno. They will kind of work together for a while before they had the falling out. The concern with authoritarianism. This is the authoritarian personality, the deference to hierarchy above, but not the leadership that were a bunch of wimps, and the demand for obedience, subordination, kiss my ass, of those below, which were subordinate classes, working classes, women, minorities, etc. And I think finally, a paper that's not very often mentioned in this context is Horkheimer's paper on the family, in which he described the family as an intergenerational factory for producing obedience and deference, and producing what George Lakoff, the social psychologist, would call the strict family orientation. Okay, with that introduction, I'm already one-fourth of my time, but who are the Tea Party? First of all, and much to our own consternation, they are not psychotic. You cannot analyze the Tea Party, despite their goofy beliefs, as a psychiatric syndrome. I was trained as a psychologist, not a sociologist. They are not clinically insane. It's hard to believe sometimes, but they're not. And secondly, they're not stupid. That's just being, that's the condescension of the left. They're misguided, they're uninformed. I mean, when you believe Glenn Beck's view of the world, you may raise some questions about their intelligence, but that's not the point. Okay, number one, they generally tend to be, like the classical example in Marx, lower middle class. You know, this is the petty bourgeoisie that in every historical case, maybe you can help me here, in almost every historical case, these are the bedrock of fascist mobilizations. This is true in Germany, in Italy, in Chile, in Iran, the Bizarres were the ones supporting Khomeini. Secondly, though, closely tied to this, it's also interesting that they tend to, about half of them tend to have college educations. They are an affluent class. These are not poor because they're mostly suburban or rural. And what's also interesting is that many of them are contractors, which are upwardly mobile, which makes them anxious, upwardly mobile working classes who've been royally screwed, I think Marx called them royally fucked, by the contradiction that took place in 2007, because they make their money building houses, and when the housing bubbles, you know, they're out of jobs and out of work and things like that. Secondly, another important element in their group are franchisees. These are the people that own the McDonald's and all of those places of dull mediocrity of the suburbs. The two most frightening things to a franchise owner are mandatory insurance and minimum wages. The average franchise clears about 10% profit on gross sales. The average franchise at McDonald's, a Kentucky Fried Chicken, a Subway, makes between $1 million and $2 million a year. Of that, about 10% will go to the owner by the time they're done with rent, property, materials, and stuff like that. If you raise the minimum wage, that's going to come out of their income. So you can have this economic, you know, nice, real, not symbolic, but a nice real material factor in their orientation. They do tend to be suburban and rural. I was going to talk about that, but I think it's already been covered. I have nothing to add to what Chris has said on this one. I think it's also important to note that they are mostly Christian. They're mostly Protestant. I'm going to tie this to American cultural traditions in a minute. And most of the Tea Party are rebranded Republicans. This is not all of a sudden a bunch of liberal Democrats suddenly seeing the errors of their ways and moving over. Secondly, they're an older population. And this is going to be important later if I get that far. When they say they want their country back, they want a white country where men are men and women are women, and the women basically respect that superiority as opposed to what's happening today. And I think it's important because in the 4 years since the last election, a good chunk of these bastards are going to die, and the ones that are now coming up are now facing the reality that they do not want their Social Security and their Medicare cut. But in fact, that's more the leadership than the follower. The rank and file, when you really push them, they don't want to see the government getting out of it. And the Republicans have just discovered that these are the third rail of their politics. Okay, this is the demographics, as sociologists always have to present the social class demographic stuff. My question, though, comes to the social psychological question as to why they are. And I think this is the heart of my argument, and I have six quick points to make, and I want to try to do it in about 10 seconds each. One, I mentioned they're authoritarian. This is the tradition that goes back to the authoritarian personality studies. I'd also mention the more recent work of people like Altemeyer, the Canadian social psychologist, and I mentioned George Lakoff, whose emphasis on the strict father and how he ties this in to the biology of the brain. He's a neuropsychologist, and how people actually have biochemical reactions from some of these kinds of things. And, you know, just in terms of what Corey was talking about, these people have a visceral reaction to the thought of the lower classes. We're not talking about a cognitive symbolic. They get tight. This is what Wilhelm Reich pointed out. And this is all tied into, you know, norepinephrine going into the brain and not being a biological reductionist, as opposed to the more mellow, you know, liberals that enjoy sex and epinephrine and dopamine going to the brain. And this becomes an important thing, just as an interesting side. Okay, the authoritarian character does tend to be safe. Sadomasochistic. In other words, these people, they're not nice people. There's a very strong authoritarian streak. Punishment, violence. These people think it's fine to waterboard prisoners, and they believe that they caught Osama because of the waterboarding, which isn't true. They have the hierarchical view of social relationships, which has already been said. I have nothing more to add to that. Part and parcel of the personality type is the projection of aggression to outgroups, which gives us both scapegoats and conspiracy theories. They tend to be very xenophobic, especially toward the rising groups that tend to be Spanish-speaking, that tend to be African-American, and it's these demographic things in the background that have been precipitating them as well as the crisis. They're racist. Now, they're very smart, as I said. They try very hard, although some of the nutcases do slip through, but they try very hard not to advertise the fact that they're racist. And you know, they try to, you know, they understand public relations. They know that if they're seen as a Ku Klux Klan, which is where their mentalities are, they're not going to get too many followers. Okay, they're you know, very patriarchal, and they really believe that women should be in their place. Or I should have mentioned that about 55% of the active Tea Party people are women, and this was already discussed. But these are women that are acting in defense of a traditional notion of the family. This was part of the 19th century early versions. I guess Corey can talk about that more than I can. Okay, and they're homophobic. And this gives, again, rise. You know, they're scared. Like, you know, you can catch it from the drinking water or something like that. And you know, no. You need a gay teacher in your classroom. Trouble is, so many people have had gay teachers and didn't know it, but that's a whole other story. Okay. Now, I think that a couple of things that are very important in my analysis are, and this is coming out of some psychoanalytic theory that I will not have time to talk about, but part and parcel of what's happening here is a shame-rage displacement dynamic. That a lot of these people have faced economic threats, if not economic realities, in terms of what happened with the meltdown. And part and parcel of the individualistic nature, I won't have time to talk about, of American national character, is you don't want to blame yourself. So one way of keeping from blaming yourself is to find a scapegoat and to be angry. For the sociologists here, this is the work that Tom Scheff has done, taking off the psychoanalyst Helen Lewis. The other thing that's important, and here I'm going to take a very, very straight Nietzschean view, is a ressentiment. It's a ressentiment, especially of those liberal, rich, comfortable elites, the people who make the big money, which are mostly sociologists, philosophers, political scientists, and all of those kinds of people. And what they're concerned about, and this is really the core of my argument, what they're really concerned with is the loss of status. Corey didn't mention, but a very important theory that was first articulated around the John Birch Society was status anxiety. For people who were in an insecure status position, especially being upwardly mobile, if you came from working class roots but you made a lot of money, how did you prove you were worth it? By embracing right-wing John Birch type politics. And that this anxiety about status, the status of men is being undermined by all those castrating women that, you know, they go to work, they run for office, and you know, and get on television and all that kind of stuff. The upwardly mobile African Americans, I mean, look, and of course it was the election of Obama was the other thing that set them off. And the final thing that I want to briefly mention is, going back to the xenophobia and the projection, a blame of all the various evil conspiracies. And as many of you New Yorkers know, the key to understanding the communist, socialist conspiracies of America were Fran Piven, that nobody else in the world had as much power as did she. And so you've either watched Glenn Beck or whatever, but to notice the power of these conspiracies, that Fran, and I don't know how many of you people know her, I know her, I'm having lunch with her the day after tomorrow, that a 78-year-old woman who's still teaching is amazing, but to be the major force behind communism in America is even more spectacular. But the paranoid conspiratorial mind can believe these kinds of things. And then, of course, there are the various other elements of the conspiracies, namely the Jews who created the Federal Reserve Bank. This is, of course, the Rothschilds. And what's the other family that created it? The Wartburgs. Who, of course, they lost all their money under Hitler, but that's besides the point. And then, of course, the other parasites, and I think this is an important thing, the African Americans, who are the lazy, worthless people who are living off the handouts that Obama is giving them. Okay. Now, the second major point that I want to make that comes out of what I've said before, which is the psychodynamic, is the more social, psychological, or sociocultural, and this is the question of American identity. which, and I will go back historically, I'll go back to, I think it's 1638, correct me if I'm wrong, in which we have the wonderful notion of the city on the hill, of the beacon of goodness and truth and God's blessing to the world that gives us a religious legitimation for the spread of American imperialism throughout the world. Many people have talked about this. I have in other places. The fact that America was established by Protestants coming, you know, there were two important consequences. One was the value of work, three consequences. The value of work. This is what Weber called the Protestant ethic, work as a beruf, as a calling. And secondly, and this goes into certain aspects of that era of Protestantism, the division of the world into two classes. Not the classes that we talk about, the proletariat and the bourgeoisie, but the chosen and the damned. And there was a good hint that if you were an affluent white worker, especially a small property owner, you were chosen. But if you were a poor slave or free black, you were damned. This gives rise to a concept that many people here have heard of producerism that was first used, I think, by Hofstadter, more recently by Chip Berlay. Of the two classes of Americans, the good ones, the people that live in the suburbs, they work hard, they mow their lawns, they paint their windows, they brainwash their children, they do everything right, and then there are the parasites, the lazy bums that live off the taxes of others. And if you ever talk to these people, and if you ask them where their tax money goes, 50% of it goes to the expletive groups, that's either the Mexicans or the African Americans, and how much goes to foreign aid? Another 40% goes to foreign aid. That leaves 10% for the military, for health. I mean, as I said, they're not stupid, but they're just very, 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 very misinformed. Okay, now this has given rise to two important mythologies in American society. The notion of American exceptionalism, and here there are some differences in the right, and this American belief that God chose us to deliver peace, freedom, justice to the world, and the individualism that emphasizes the individual is the actor. And people that know the economic history of the United States know that much of the economic history of the United States was based on the involvement of the American government and huge shitloads of capital coming largely from Britain, Britain and France. But nevertheless, this is important. Now, you put all of these things together, and one of the things that's leading to the deterioration of our society are vile satanic forces that portend apocalypse soon. And you see this in some of the extreme religious groups, the Left Behind and things like that. There are evil conspiracies afoot, including the Jews that are pulling the strings that run Obama. I do think that Obama is basically a puppet of capital, but it has very little to do, the capital could be completely fungible and all that kind of stuff. Okay, in 3 minutes, how do they get mobilized? As both Chris and Corey have talked about, this has been an element in American society since, I would say, 1690, but I'll go with 1840 and the Know Nothing Party to keep it from controversies. And it doesn't take much to get them going. Between the economic crisis of 2007 that they blame Obama for and the election of Obama, this was enough to really set them off. And a couple of things happened. There was the classical rant and rave of Rick Santorelli, the CNN commercial, CNN business correspondent, who said, why should we pay for the mortgages of these people living beyond their means, which wasn't exactly the mansions that he was talking about. It was basically the poor. And this struck a note. No sooner did that happen than we saw the AstroTurf groups. This was the Americans for Prosperity and Freedom Works, the Koch brothers, Dick Armey, et cetera, got them going. And this basically just kindled something that was already happening. And so various groups formed on the basis of, and I don't know how many sociologists are in the audience that know social movement theory, this was the emergence of submerged networks in the theories of Malucci. And so it wasn't that new groups formed, but these connections formed, and the Tea Parties emerged overnight, much led by the big money that led to the various AstroTurf. Okay, now, they did gain power. They got a lot of notoriety. I don't have to tell this audience that the mainstream press basically will cover a demonstration of 10 Tea Party members and consider this the future. A million anti-war people will go to Washington and it won't even be covered in the sports page or anything like that. Okay, but they did have some success in the election, but this was not as much as they take credit for. Anybody who knows American politics knows that the off-year election, the party in power always loses some. Plus, there was the huge disillusionment by all kinds of people, some of them sitting in this room that actually voted for Obama, and found out that there's this much difference between Obama and Bush. In fact, many people call Obama Bush 3. There is a difference. I was arguing with Jessica. The difference is women's issues. That's about the only thing. Imperialism, capitalism, screw the workers, there's not much difference. But on the women's issue, Obama knows that he needs those votes to get reelected. So we see after the election of a large number of Tea Party people in Washington, I'm going to need 1 minute more. Well, after the election of a large number of Tea Party people, we see that this is the beginning of the end. And this can be seen very clearly. If you look at the results, Fran Piven 1, Glenn Beck 0. That what has now happened, and we see this taking place in the Republican Party, that the Tea Party people, just like the Christian conservatives before them and the Birchers before them, are the useful idiots of the Republican Party. I didn't coin that term. Who coined that term? Glenn. Okay. But now the useless idiots are becoming useless because they're now tearing the country apart. There's major rifts going on in the Republican Party, such that the best that they can do is somewhere between Michelle Bachmann and, I don't know, Trump or something like that. What is the future? Well, I have a lengthy discussion here that I'm not going to do that's mostly of interest to sociologists about the ebb and flow of social movements. Why do they come and they rise? And that's the difference of the left and the right. Quite briefly, the right is always a restorationist kind of movement. They want to restore the power, the losers, I think Corey put it nicely, to restore the power that's being challenged or being attacked. And so we want our country back. This is the country of the white men who are the boss of their little suburban palaces and things like that. The left has a future. We have a vision. Maybe it's right, maybe it's wrong, maybe it's utopian or not, but it's a future-oriented state to be realized. And that's the thing that can keep us going despite centuries of failure, but we are getting better. So a number of things are taking place, you know, that the membership is dropping. They're less enthusiastic. A lot of the older folks have croaked. People are getting used to Obama. You know, they may not vote for him for president, or they may not, you know, invite him over to their house for dinner, and they surely don't want their daughter going out with him. But at least, you know, the hatred, he's not quite as horrible, and, you know, maybe, you know, he could deliver pizza or something to that effect. That the economy is seemingly getting better, especially all of those people here that play the stock market. You know, it's like four-year highs or something like that. The good news is there's more jobs. The bad news is there's more unemployment. But it seems that there's more jobs. Most of them are shit jobs. These are McJobs. That, you know, it's hard. What was that figure? It's harder to get a job at McDonald's than get into Harvard. It's a different population, to be sure, but there are the perception that the economy is getting a little bit better. And now, after what's very clear in Madison, and I think I was talking with Eric about it before, it's now the Republicans that are being seen as the bad guys. So my conclusion, which I will just summarize in three or four words, this element of the right is going, but it's never going to be gone. Thank you.